Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, February 12th, 2021. Section A, Politics. Alan West, Republican Party already share principles with Hispanics, by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N, at HearstMP.com. Alan West, the chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, said Thursday he has seen firsthand the destruction the Democratic Party can do. It was to his old neighborhood in Atlanta. And there's a better alternative for Hispanics in Midland, Texas, and across the nation. He told those in attendance at the Midland Republican National Hispanic Assembly meeting at the Bush Convention Center that progressives laid waste to principles held dear in the neighborhood where he grew up, including the nuclear family, the Judeo-Christian faith heritage, the church, individual responsibility, small business entrepreneurship, and service to the nation. They were, as he said, principles that made the neighborhood strong. Because I'm saying to my Spanish brothers and sisters that are here in Texas and all across the United States, what you saw the progressive socialist left, what you saw the Democratic Party do to my neighborhood, do to my community, do to the black people of the United States, don't allow them to do that to you. The former lieutenant colonel who was deployed in Operation Desert Shield and Operation Desert Storm told those in attendance that the greatest amount of Medal of Honor recipients in the history of the U.S. do not come from the white community, but the Hispanic community, a remainder of their principles. And we want to share that message. He told those about the strides of Republicans and conservatives made in the president election, especially in the Rio Grande Valley, where Donald Trump flipped counties that were previously deep blue and gained ground in other counties from Harlingen and moving north. He commented that as chairman of the Republican Party of Texas, the first place he went was the Rio Grande Valley, and the last place he campaigned before election was also the Valley. He said Republicans must show up in areas they previously had given up for Democrats. He said while Democrats were worried about Republican battles in Dallas suburbs, his party was sharing their party's core principles and values with willing allies. That's what we did in the Rio Grande Valley. So all of a sudden you had counties that had never been red for 100 years because they heard that it's not about defunding our police, it's not about keeping away safety, security, it's about making you have your strong families, it's about making you have better education opportunities, it's about making sure that you can be a victor, which is why people come to the United States of America through the front door, not the back door. Because they want to be a part of what I call the equality of opportunity and not the equality of outcomes. So that's why this organization is here is so important, because this organization will take the message out there so that we're not alienated. West reminded Republicans, organization members, and other visitors that in 2020, the Republican Party of Texas came up with 8 priorities: election integrity, religious freedom, children and gender modification, abolition of abortion, constitutional carry, monument protection, school choice for all, and the banning of taxpayer-funded lobbying. Some of the rest of his address included a reminder of the importance of the Second Amendment to all Texans and the need for more protections for the unborn. He said Midland Odessa was leading by example with the election of Hispanics for mayor, Jerry Morales and Javier Hoven, and West said Republicans need to be active not just during election season. He encouraged steady engagement. There's nothing wrong with being a community organizer. I mean, we laugh when they say Barack Obama is a community organizer. You know what? We need a community to organize. We need to get out there and get into these precincts, because I need you to find out every single person all across Midland and Odessa and understand which way they vote. I need you to start right now. Don't wait until 2 months before the election. He said there was opportunity for the Republican National Hispanic Assembly to match up with a party that shares their principles. But the most important thing I can share with the Midland Republican National Hispanic Assembly is don't let what happened to African Americans happen to you. The opinion page. When the hateful think, they are virtuous. This week, Virginia Hefferman, a columnist for the Los Angeles Times, unleashed the most perverse column in recent memory. The title, What Can You Do About the Trumpites Next Door? Hefferman wasn't lamenting neighbors who had tagged her house with pro-Trump graffiti, or who had participated in the January 6th riots, or who had even held an election watch party and turned the music up too loud. No, Hefferman was lamenting the travails of living next door to Trump supporters who had cleared her driveway of snow. Hefferman writes, Trumpites next door to our pandemic getaway just plowed our driveway without being asked and did a great job. This simple act launched Hefferman into a journey of angst and rage. How am I going to resist demands for unity in the face of this act of aggressive niceness? She laments. I realize I owe them thanks, and man, it really looks like the guy back-dragged the driveway like a pro. But how much thanks? In order to justify the answer, she wants to give as little thanks as possible because, after all, these are evil Trumpites. Heffernan proceeds to speculate as to her neighbor's motives. Perhaps they only cleared her driveway because she and they were white. Or perhaps this whole event was a reminder that members of evil groups sometimes do good. She compares them to the Shiite terrorists around Hezbollah, Nation of Islam leader Louis Frankenham, and the Nazis. If she treats her neighbors with too much decency, she reminds herself, that might make her like an upper-middle-class family from France who collaborated with the Nazis and lamented the Nazis' defeat because of their commitment to being polite. Hefferman seethes with the agony of cognitive dissonance. My neighbors supported a man who showed near murderous contempt for the majority of Americans, she writes. They kept him in business with their support. But the plowing. In the end, Heffernan's solution is to be nice, but not that nice. She'll offer a wave and a thanks, but she is not ready to knock on the door with a covered dish yet. She's unwilling to give her neighbors absolution, ignoring the fact that they have not asked for absolution, nor do they require absolution from the great sin of voting differently and clearing her driveway of snow. Free driveway work, as nice as it is, Heffernan states, is just not the same currency as justice and truth. The only way she'll be able to truly treat her neighbors decently is if they recognize the truth about the Trump administration and work for justice for all those whom the administration harmed. Then she'll be decent to her neighbors. Heffernan's neighbors should immediately pile as much snow as humanly possible back onto her driveway, hose it off, and let it freeze. The nasty snootiness Hefferman evidences is all too common these days. Hefferman obviously judges her neighbors not on the basis of what she knows about them, but on the stereotypes she holds about all Trump voters. When faced with the reality that those who disagree with her can be nice and decent people, she simply dismisses the possibility altogether, justifying her own viciousness by referencing their supposedly radical political beliefs, which, of course, makes her the villainess in this particular morality play. But she's too blind to see it. These days, tens of millions of Americans are, and so the social fabric continues to shred, all in the name of depraved, unearned moral superiority. MPD reports 65 accidents because of icy roads, by Caitlin Randall, C-R-A-N-D-L-E at MRT.com. The Midland Police Department reported 45 minor accidents and 20 others with injuries from midnight to 2 p.m. today because of icy road conditions. A Facebook post from the MPD this morning asked drivers to use caution, slow down, allow extra time to travel, and stay home if possible. The worst spots for accidents were Loop 250, Interstate 20, and Highway 191. TxDOT reported patches of ice and snow on Loop 250, Big Spring Street, Interstate 20, and several farm-to-market roads. They discouraged driving on these roads because of black ice. The Odessa Police Department responded to 21 crashes, including 4 rollovers, as of 8 a.m. The worst roads in Odessa were also Interstate 20 and Highway 191, as well as Highway 80. Please remember the following if you do travel. Reduce your speed and maintain a safe distance to the vehicle in front of you that will allow enough time to stop your vehicle in case of an emergency. Drive with your headlights on and use extra caution when traveling over bridges. Avoid using cruise control and ease off the gas pedal or brakes if you start to skid. The National Weather Service reported a high of 28 degrees on Thursday. The high for Friday is expected to be 28. Midland Health sending more vaccines to Marfa after miscommunication. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. Midland Health is heading back to Marfa with 60 additional doses of the COVID-19 vaccine after a miscommunication reportedly led to several people with appointments not receiving the vaccine during a clinic on Tuesday. Midland Health administered 504 doses Tuesday from the hospital's allotment as part of an effort to vaccinate smaller communities without access to the vaccine. As a direct result of miscommunication between our team and local officials, depletion of the vaccine occurred before several patients with appointments could be vaccinated, a spokesman said. That statement followed a Facebook post by Marfa Country Clinic, who partnered with Midland Health to administer the vaccine, which said Midland Memorial effed Marfa around. They ignored vaccine appointments already made, gave them to anyone, and then went home. Tons of people with vaccine appointments didn't get theirs despite being scheduled. We are furious. The community needs to know. When reached by phone, a staff member of Marfa Country Clinic said they didn't write the post and had tried to delete it. She said the post was made by someone else who had access to their Facebook page. The staff member confirmed that miscommunication created the confusion that led to some with appointments not being vaccinated Tuesday. Everyone's happy, she said. That's been resolved. It's all good. The Midland Health spokesman said they've spoken to Marfa officials and will be providing an additional 60 doses to be administered to those who had appointments but were not vaccinated. Midland Health has committed to providing vaccines to nearby counties outside Midland and Odessa that fall into Trauma Service Area J. They provided 190 doses to Garden City and 405 doses to Fort Davis, in addition to the vaccines administered in Marfa, CEO and President Russell Myers said during a press conference. Midland Health had reported Tuesday that it would give 504 vaccines in Marfa. Midland Health's website shows more than 25,000 people in Midland and across the region have received vaccinations through Midland Health or those entities it has partnered with. City. COVID cases down 15.2% this week from staff reports. The Midland Health Department is reporting 178 COVID cases through Wednesday of this week, a 15% decrease compared to the same point last week. The Health Department reported 210 COVID cases through Wednesday of last week, en route to 317 cases during the entire week, the fewest of any week since at least October. This week's count includes 28 on Wednesday. The city also reported a COVID-19-related death, a male in his 90s who passed away on Wednesday. The man had underlying conditions and was the 231st death related to COVID of a person from Midland County during the pandemic. There have been 16,168 overall COVID cases and 12,007 recoveries reported by the health department. Roses keep Flowerland busy. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis@hurstmp.com. Flowerland ordered 3,500 red roses this year for Valentine's Day, and the shop will use almost all of them. Chris Collum, Flowerland manager, said red roses remain one of the most popular floral arrangements in Midland. On Thursday, two florists were handling most of the Valentine's Day orders by creating arrangements, making bowls, and placing tags or other gifts alongside the arrangements. Mainly, it is always roses, especially red roses. Here at Flowerland, we do a lot of mixed arrangements, but red roses are still the most popular. The flower shop started doing prep work the Sunday before Valentine's Day, then full-on production started on Monday. Colum said this holiday has been odd because of the pandemic and weather. However, the flowers do enjoy the cooler weather. The shop's cooler is currently full of Valentine's Day arrangements. Flowerland is open from 8 to 5:30 on Friday and 10 to 2 on Saturday at 413 Andrews Highway. For more information, call 242-3018.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, February 12th, 2021. Section A. MCH adding staff to phone lines. Vaccine clinic is Wednesday and February 21st next week by Federico Martinez. Medical Center Health System officials Thursday said they are boosting the number of staff answering phones to help people more quickly schedule their COVID-19 booster second dose appointments. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin acknowledged the number of calls this week has been overwhelming the hospital's phone lines. Tippin and other local health care officials participated in a virtual news conference Thursday. I know there is a lot of frustration out there, said Tippin, who noted the healthcare system currently has 25 people answering phones throughout the day. We are working to add more people answering phones. Right now, having people call in is the most effective way of doing this. Again, we continue to ask people for their patience. In addition to having people call in, hospital staff have been calling people who previously received their first vaccination shot at Ratliff Stadium and scheduling their second shots, which are being conducted at MCH clinics. MCH Chief Nursing Officer Kristen Abbott Timmons said the public must schedule their second shots by phone. People who physically show up at a clinic and try to schedule or receive their second shot will be turned away. To schedule an appointment, Odessans can call 432-640-2747. That number is answered Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tippin said the hospital simply doesn't have the resources to manage an online sign-up system or coordinate appointments during the mass Pfizer vaccinations being held at Ratliff Stadium. Tippin also announced that mass vaccinations will only be held 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. next Wednesday and Sunday, February 21st. Tippin said MCH wanted to offer a weekend date, which allows more people to attend. Odessa Regional Medical Center Chief Medical Officer Dr. Rohith Saravanan said his hospital and local pharmacies in recent weeks have been receiving less than expected to no second vaccine doses or no second vaccine doses because the state has decided to focus on shipping vaccines to mass vaccination sites instead. Those sites are only providing first doses. That change has prompted concerns from people who have already received their first shots and are anxiously awaiting their second, Saravanan said. The good news is that the CDC is reassuring health providers that the second shots can be delayed for at least 42 days and still be effective when administered, Saravanan said. ORMC Thursday reported it is housing 21 COVID-19 patients, 15 who are in critical condition and 5 on ventilators. Scenic Mountain Medical Center reported no COVID patients Thursday. MCH reported 46 COVID patients, 20 in critical care, and 17 on ventilators. Weather changes OC hours. Due to inclement weather and extreme temperatures over the next several days, Odessa College, the Extension Centers in Andrews, Monahans, and Pecos, as well as the Sports Center, the Learning Resources Center, and the Children's Center, will observe the following hours of operation. Today, Friday, all classes will meet remotely. Students should check email and Blackboard for any specific announcements from instructors regarding class time, assignments, etc. Brunch and dinner service will be available for students who live in residence. The following facilities will open at 10 a.m. Children's Center, Wrangler Express Center, Sports Center, Learning Resource Center. Saturday, Wrangler Express closed, Learning Resource Center closed, Sports Center open at 10 a.m. Sunday, Sports Center closed, Learning Resource Center closed. Brunch and dinner service will be available for students who live in residence. All classes will meet remotely. Students should check email and Blackboard for any specific announcements from instructors regarding class time, assignments, etc. Brunch and dinner service will be available for students who live in residence. Continue to monitor the college's social media sites and Weather Alert webpage for updated information. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Asian flu and COVID-19. Dear Dr. Roach, I am curious if there is any relationship between the Asian flu in 1968-69 and having possible immunity to COVID-19. I had the flu while pregnant in 1968. I had been in very close contact to someone in September who came down with COVID the very next day, a serious case but not hospitalized. I did quarantine and then tested negative after 2 weeks. J.M. Answer. No, I don't think that is at all likely. The influenza virus and COVID-19 are very different viruses, as different as a pineapple and a pine cone. I don't know why you didn't get infected after having been in close contact with a known case. It's not clear why some people seem to be more infectious, and perhaps some people are more susceptible. You may have had an asymptomatic case in the past. However, it is a mistake to consider yourself possibly immune to COVID-19, and a serious mistake to think this proves COVID-19 doesn't exist, as a few people have written me. Even after getting the illness or the vaccine, people need to continue to take precautions. No vaccine is perfect, and it is clear that even people who have had COVID-19 can get it again. Local News Roundup. Warming Center. The City of Odessa and the Salvation Army are teaming together to provide a free warming center for those who may need shelter from the extreme cold weather. The shelter is located at 810 East 11th and will open tonight, Friday, through Tuesday morning. The public can begin arriving at the shelter at 6:30 or at 5 p.m. for those who want to eat dinner in the soup kitchen first. Free food, beverages, cots, blankets, pillows, and toiletries will be provided. 80s Valentine Movie Night. Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 in Midland, has scheduled 80s Valentine Movie Night, Cinema Under the Stars, February 13th, with a showing of the 1984 classic 16 Candles. Doors open at 6:30 p.m. and the show will start at 7:30 p.m. Free popcorn will be provided. 80s attire is encouraged. Admission is $5 and free for UTPB students and staff. For tickets, visit www.wagnerknoll.com. Lucha Libre. Lucha Libre event has been scheduled for 7:30 p.m. February 13th at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. The event will feature Laredo Kid, Psycho Clown, Aerostar, Megha Wolf, Magno Mag, Mini Fusion, La Hierda, special visit from XWCW Megastar Conan, and many more. For tickets or to sign up, meet and greet the stars, visit boxofficesolutions.net/index.html or call 432-803-7179 or 432-934-2558. Honor the Blue donates $52,000 to OPD by Royal McGregor. Lance Van Zant and Chase McCain delivered a $52,000 donation to help fund the Odessa Police Department's virtual training program. The co-founders of Honor the Blue presented the check to members of the Odessa Police Department, including OPD Chief Michael Gerke, Thursday morning in the lobby of the Odessa Police Department. Van Zant said the events that took place last October collected more than $120,000, but he explained that Honor the Blue was about appreciating and interacting with law enforcement. Law enforcement is the shield and our protection in the community, Van Zant said. Anything that happens, whether it's a fender bender, domestic abuse, stealing, or breaking into vehicles, whatever the situation is, you are going to call the police. They are the ones who bridge that gap for protection. Honor the Blue has attracted more than 500 people at each event. Gerke said he was impressed by the turnout due to the coronavirus. No one asked these guys to put this organization together and do this, Gerke said. They did it because they wanted to. It's something they thought was a good idea, good for the community and good for the department. How great is that? That's awesome. OPD was the first of four law enforcement agencies that Honor the Blue presented its donation. McCain said the other three law enforcement agencies, Ector County Sheriff's Office, Midland Police Department, and Midland County Sheriff's Office, will receive their checks this month. The Odessa Chuck Wagon Gang, which provided plates during the events, also helped Honor the Blue with its donations to the four local law enforcements. All the money went toward paying the expenses of the event and law enforcement, Van Zant said. There wasn't anybody who profited or made anything off the event. Gerke explained that the $52,000 donation will go a long way for virtual training at OPD. It's an indoor training apparatus, Gerke said. It's not just shoot, don't shoot. It's also de-escalation. It's decision-making. It's all of those very important things that officers have to be trained on. Van Zant said he wasn't sure if Honor the Blue would be an annual event. However, he believed that with more time and more planning, Honor the Blue could be bigger than it was last year. We are still in communication to see if we are going to continue to do this event, he said. We decided to do this on a spur of the moment, and we didn't have a whole lot of time to plan for it. We planned for it maybe 6 weeks or so. We think if we were able to have more time to get the word out or the message out, whether it's media, Facebook, or out in the street, we would have a better turnout. COVID-19 news by the numbers. ECISD daily cases, 7 students, 6 staff. U.S. cases, 27,127,858 total confirmed and 470,110 deaths. On the web, dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. COVID-19 vaccines. Medical Center Hospital will be administering the first dose of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine at the drive-through clinic at Ratliff Stadium, South Main Entrance. The clinic will start at 9 a.m. and gates close at 2 p.m. Clinics have been canceled today, Friday, due to expected cold weather. The clinic will resume next week, just Wednesday, and February 21st. The clinic is for Phase 1A frontline workers and Phase 1B, most at risk, and for ages 65 and older. Online registration requested for quicker on-site processing. For those who are not able to register online, they will be rerouted to a waiting area to register before vaccination. Wear short-sleeve clothing, easy to access your arm. Bring a valid driver's license or other photo ID. To pre-register or for more information, visit mchodessa.com. For those looking for a way to help, email volunteers@odessatx.gov. MCH will be administering booster, second doses, shots of Pfizer vaccines starting Monday. Those who received the first shot at Ratliff Stadium can call to set an appointment at 432-640-2747. Phone line will only be answered during clinic hours. The booster shots will be given at two urgent care locations, 3001 JBS Parkway and 6030 West University. Hours have been extended to accommodate the community from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday and from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. The community should set an appointment within their five-date range listed on their vaccination card. No booster shots will be given to patients before the first date listed on their card. If patients can't make the five-date range on the card, they can still make an appointment after those dates. MCHS is also asking the community to only show up for their appointment a few minutes before their allotted time to avoid a crowd in the waiting room and to ensure the most efficient process possible. There will be no walk-ins for the booster shot. Odessa Regional Medical Center is expecting COVID-19 vaccines soon. Please check on vaccine availability, 432-582-8549, or visit tinyurl.com Y3JQHZ89. Walgreens has limited COVID-19 vaccines available. Visit tinyurl.com/YHR6NEUD. HEB pharmacies are prepared to receive new allotments of COVID-19 vaccine at any time. Once they have vaccine, eligible customers can sign up using the scheduler to receive a COVID-19 vaccine. Visit vaccine.heb.com. CVS stores are administering the COVID-19 vaccine by appointment only, based on local eligibility guidelines. CVS.com or CVS Pharmacy app or call 800-746-7287. Walmart and Sam's Club pharmacies are administering COVID-19 vaccine based on state and federal eligibility guidelines. Visit www.walmart.com/CP/1228302 or www.samsclub.com/pharmacy. Transitioning students and charter discussed. Transitioning some Ector County ISD virtual learners back to campus and the possible charter school partner for Ector College Prep Success Academy were among the topics Superintendent Scott Murray reviewed during his media call Wednesday. We have a group of virtual learners in elementary, middle, and high school who are struggling right now in that virtual environment, and we want to make sure that all of our students have the optimal academic experience, he said. We want to ensure that every child is being successful this year. Murray said parents were notified last week. A letter went home to all parents in ECISD who have a child at home who is struggling. When we say struggling, we're talking about students who are making D's or F's in academic courses, or kids who are not attending school on a regular basis. The state of Texas requires a certain attendance rate for elementary, middle, and high school students. We do have some kids who are not attending school regularly in a virtual environment. So if children fall into either one of those categories, or perhaps both of those categories, then starting February 22nd, those students will transition back to face-to-face instruction, he added. If a parent has a question about that, Murray encouraged them to contact their school administrator, an assistant principal or principal at their child's school, and talk to them about that process. A bad weather makeup day was scheduled for February 15th, but with brutally cold temperatures and precipitation predicted, Murray said a different decision may need to be made. He urged families to keep an eye on the local weather forecast. If we need to make a different decision, we will notify you via all our social media outlets, Twitter and Facebook, as well as the ECISD website. So again, parents and children, pay attention to any hazardous conditions that may occur this weekend, Murray said. At its February 9th board work session, ECISD trustees listened to a charter company called Third Future that is interested in taking over operation of Ector College Prep Success Academy. In January, ECISD trustees voted to non-renew its contract with Ector Success Academy Network, which runs Ector until June 30th. They presented their information to our Board of Trustees, and our Board of Trustees had many, many questions for them last night. We engaged in about 1.5-hour conversation with this organization, Murray said. They have also reached out to our families, he added. Last week, our families had an opportunity to meet with that organization. Again, the Ector Middle School families and then the staff of Ector Middle School have also had an opportunity to meet with this particular organization. In the coming months, our Board of Trustees will make a final decision as to which charter organization will be selected to run Ector Middle School, he added. Third Future came forward through a call for quality schools. When the process was completed in the fall, Murray said ECISD identified three companies that were appropriate or a fit for ECISD. Ector would be Third Future's second Permian Basin campus. The other is Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Elementary. Days start at 6:30 a.m. and currently end at 4:30 p.m., with plans to end at 5 p.m. in the fall. Students who are in 8th grade, for example, may not start class until 7:30 a.m., but students are supervised. Officials represented at the February 9th board meeting said they don't close for snow. Murray said Third Future is interested in making sure individual student needs are met. Their day is organized so that they can teach core academics, but also take care of kids, provide interventions with kids who are struggling, and providing acceleration opportunities for those kids who need more than the average dose of academics, if you will. Their day is well organized, Murray said. Middle school students need structure in their life to be successful. In fact, we all need some level of structure, and certainly they provide that environment for our kids. But it's a very nurturing environment, too. They have a strong social-emotional learning component. They recognize that if kids do not feel safe in their environment, if kids are not connected to teachers at school, then they're not as successful, he added. The last place I would lift up is their community activities. Every student in the school is required to engage in community volunteering activities, so they are very organized in providing opportunities for the kids to be out and about serving in the community, Murray said. Start dates and times will be negotiated as part of the contract with the charter provider. As for the board, Murray said, in the state of Texas, the law requires a charter organization to have a Texas board, and currently Third Future has one school in Texas that they operate, so their board oversees that one school. But hypothetically, if Third Future had 20 schools, it would be that same board that would oversee all of the schools in the system, much like our Board of Trustees oversees the 43 schools in ECISD. The board currently in place for Third Future will remain the same, he said. Charter organizations have appointed board members. Also, the name, mascot, and colors of Ector will remain the same. Third Future talked very specifically about maintaining as much of those practices and cultural items that are healthy as they possibly can. They do not want to come in and create upheaval for the students or the community at all. Those are things that are important to the community. They're important to the families, and I have no desire to change any of that, Murray said. Landgraf files energy bill. Austin. State Representative Brooks Landgraf, Republican, Odessa, filed House Bill 1683, dubbed the Texas Energy Independence Act, to stop the implementation of any overreaching new federal regulations on oil and gas production in Texas. This is about protecting jobs in the Permian Basin, Landgraf said in a news release issued Thursday. Like no other time in history, American energy operations are being threatened, and Texas must be prepared to resist overreach in the oil patch. I filed HB 1683 to defend our oil fields, to defend Texas jobs and businesses from the tentacles of federal bureaucracy. House Bill 1683 prohibits Texas state agencies and officials from contracting with or providing assistance to any federal agency or official regarding the enforcement of a federal statute, order, rule, or regulation regulating oil and gas operations if the regulation is not already in existing state law. HB 1683 also prohibits any political subdivision in Texas from receiving any state grant funding if the political subdivision adopts any such rule or regulation of oil and gas operations. Finally, the bill provides a process for any Texan to be able to submit a report to the Texas Attorney General regarding a political subdivision that enforces a federal regulation of oil and gas operations that is not in state law. The oil and gas industry provides billions of dollars in revenue that helps fund construction of highways and bridges all over the state, along with public education and 100 other state services over the years, Landgraf said in the release. The Texas Energy Independence Act will serve as a bulwark against overreaching federal policies that value the opinions of a vocal minority over the livelihood of hardworking Texans. Temps will continue downward, by Michael Bauer. Wednesday night and Thursday morning saw many people in the area greeted by the cold weather brought about by the Arctic air, bringing about icy conditions and making travel arduous for some residents. Thursday's low temperature was below the freezing level at 21, with the high only in the 30s. Odessans can expect the temperatures to stay in the 20s and 30s over the next couple of days as the weekend rolls around, senior forecaster Greg Murdoch of the National Weather Service in Midland said. It's looking like the cold air could last and hold in longer than what we were looking at 2 days ago, Murdoch said. It'll be colder for longer. The worst of the conditions are expected to be Sunday and Monday, where the possibility of snow is strong, according to Murdoch. But he added that Saturday's forecast can also be unpromising. That could include sleet and some snow showers as well. It's still going to be very cold on Saturday as well, Murdoch said. But Sunday morning we should have lows in the mid-teens, and they won't move during the day at all, maybe a few degrees. Murdoch has also warned that the wind chill could make things even colder on Monday. As far as the wind chill readings, come Monday, the wind is going to be blowing out of the north around 20 to 25 miles per hour, and that's going to push the wind chills down to dangerous levels at the minus 20 degree level in the Permian Basin, Murdoch said. As far as records being broken, the Permian Basin can possibly expect to see daily record low temperatures get broken Monday and Tuesday. Wednesday was already a milestone day, Murdoch said. Wednesday, we broke a low high temperature, Murdoch said. It was the lowest that the high temperature had gotten. Previously, it was 37, and it got down to 36 degrees. We broke a minimum high temperature. Those records will all be in play. We're looking at low temperatures. We probably won't break our monthly low record, which is our all-time record low, but we could break the longest duration of temperatures below 32 degrees. That record is also in play. Thursday morning, road conditions in the Odessa Midland area were icy, causing numerous wrecks from motorists. According to the Odessa Police Department, there were 30 wrecks on Thursday as of 2:50 p.m. Murdoch said that traveling conditions could get worse. Traveling is not recommended because any direction that you leave from here, the weather is going to be just as bad, if not worse. You won't be able to escape it. The best advice is to stay home and stay warm this weekend. If you do have to travel for whatever reason, you really better prepare to have equipment in case you get stranded. Travel is not recommended Friday through Monday. As far as temperatures warming back up, don't expect for that to happen until mid to late next week, when the forecast calls for 40 and 50 degree weather again. We hope that maybe by Tuesday afternoon we'll be able to warm up, Murdoch said. It depends on if the clouds break up and maybe we see some sun.
Biden following the lead of Trump, Obama. As an American, I wish President Joe Biden every success in defeating the pandemic and getting the economy moving again. But when it comes to the dysfunction of our political system and the polarized climate generally, it's becoming clear he's part of the problem, not the solution. I don't think this is deliberate. No doubt Biden believes he's doing right as he sees it. He's also probably sincere about his desire to detoxify our politics by pushing for some gauzy notion of unity. The real problem isn't the player, it's the game. Over the last half century, the parties and their voters have separated from each other like oil and water in a centrifuge. As Amy Walter of the Cook Political Report notes, Americans don't even agree on the same set of problems. She points to data from the Pew Research Center that illuminates the divide. According to Pew, in 1999, improving the educational system topped the list of priorities for both Republicans and Democrats, and four of the top five issues for Republicans were listed among top five issues for Democrats as well. 10 years later, Pew researchers report, in the wake of the financial crisis, three issues, economy, jobs, and terrorism, topped the list among both Republicans and Democrats, although they ranked them slightly differently. As of 2019, there was not one overlapping priority between the top five priorities for Democrats and those of Republicans. Heap as much scorn as you like on Donald Trump. I won't object. But his legislative agenda was largely dedicated to giving Republicans what they wanted. It looked deeply partisan because it was. In a country where there is a lot of consensus about what to do, it's easy for a president to pick an issue that's popular in both parties. It's harder when few such issues exist. That's one reason George W. Bush started his presidency by working with Senator Ted Kennedy and the Democrats on education reform. Biden isn't following Bush's example. He's following his two immediate predecessors, Barack Obama and Trump, though so far it's mostly been through executive orders. To be clear, I disagree with most of the policies Biden has announced, but my point isn't about policy, it's about politics. As it stands, it looks like the Biden administration would rather push a COVID-19 relief package on a straight party line vote than agree to some bipartisan compromise package that didn't go big as defined by the Democratic base. Even if Biden is right about the need for a $1.9 trillion bill, I don't think he is. The cost will be more than economic if he crams it through with only Democratic votes. In 2009, Obama pushed through a stimulus bill with no Republican support in the House and only three Republicans in the Senate. At the time, Obama didn't think he needed Republican support. And as a matter of vote counting, he was right, given the Democratic majorities. But he could have gotten Republican votes. Obama was very popular when he took office. According to Gallup, he started with an initial approval rating of 70%. According to Gallup, he started with an initial approval rating near 70%, and an astonishing 83% of Americans approved his transition efforts. Republican strategists at the time told me that if Obama had offered Republicans real buy-in, he easily could have gotten enough votes to make the stimulus bipartisan. Obama thought he already made concessions to the GOP on the substance. What he didn't appreciate is that to get participation from the opposition needs to be included in the process, not handed an ultimatum. As a result, Obama owned the stimulus politically. And when the stimulus failed to stimulate, the Republicans could run against the Obama economy in the midterms. They did, leading to a landslide rout of the Democrats. The stimulus led directly to the GOP's obstructionist stance throughout the Obama presidency. When you push major legislation on a party line basis, the opposing party has no incentive to provide cover for it. Moreover, as Walter writes, it alienates not just those in the other party, but it may fail to attract independent voters. If only one side is willing to defend it and the other side is busy trashing it, well, that law can become pretty unpopular very quickly. That's what happened again and again to both Obama and Trump. Biden may not need Republicans to get the legislation he wants right now, but he needs at least some of them to get the unifying politics he wants. Jonah Goldberg, Tribune Content Agency. Here's how to stop the Democrats' filibuster. One of the greatest privileges I experienced during my years working on Capitol Hill was the chance to enter the Senate chamber, the sanctum sanctorum of our democracy, while the Senate was in session. So to watch a mob desecrate that sacred space on January 6th, hanging from walls, rifling through desks, and taking selfies in the presiding officer's chair, was deeply disturbing. The rioters did violence to a hallowed institution. But today, it is Democrats who are proposing to do violence to the institution by eliminating one of its most fundamental tenets, the right of the minority to delay, amend, or block legislation. And unlike the damage done by the mob, the damage Democrats propose would be irreparable. The Abolish the Filibuster movement among Democrats has been set back only thanks to the opposition from two senators, Joe Manchin III, D. West Virginia, and Kristen Sinema, D. Arizona. But those who want to bypass the minority have found a workaround. They're considering eliminating the Byrd Rule, an arcane but vitally important pillar of Senate procedure that prevents extraneous provisions from being tacked onto must-pass budget reconciliation legislation that requires only a simple majority vote to pass. On Tuesday, the Senate's Democratic majority voted to move forward on President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief plan using the reconciliation process, which would allow them to pass it without any GOP votes. Their COVID plan includes provisions, such as a $15 minimum wage, that violate the Byrd Rule. As Martin B. Gold, former counsel to two Senate majority leaders, explained to me, a provision is extraneous under the Byrd Rule if it doesn't affect the federal budget or if the fiscal impact is merely incidental to the broad policy effects of the provision. A minimum wage increase does not meet that test because its primary impact is on the private market. You cannot have a fiscal tail wag a non-fiscal dog, he says. This means that if Democrats tried to pass the minimum wage as part of the budget reconciliation process, the Senate parliamentarian would advise the presiding officer that a minimum wage increase is out of order. There are two ways Democrats could overcome that obstacle. First, they could use a blunt instrument and invoke the nuclear option to eliminate the Byrd Rule altogether. But they'd need 50 votes to do that, and Manchin and Sinema may balk. This is especially true since the Byrd Rule is named for Senator Robert C. Byrd of West Virginia, whom Manchin counts as mentor. In an interview with Fox News' Brett Baier, Manchin said he would vote to protect the Byrd Rule and defend the legacy of Robert C. Byrd. But there is another way around the Byrd Rule that Manchin cannot so easily block. Vice President Harris, serving as presiding officer of the Senate, could simply ignore the Senate parliamentarian and rule that a minimum wage increase does not violate the Byrd Rule. Republicans would then have to muster 60 votes to overrule her. That means even if both Manchin and Sinema voted with Republicans, they could not stop Harris. Their only option would be to vote against the entire reconciliation bill, killing their party's entire COVID relief package. Since the Senate works on precedent, once the presiding officer ignores the parliamentarian's ruling, the Byrd Rule will have been gutted. From that point forward, the majority party can insert anything it wants into a reconciliation bill using the same precedent, effectively eliminating the filibuster. Why would any Senate majority leader break his neck to get 60 votes for a bill if he could just use budget reconciliation to pass it with 51 votes? Democrats will be able to pass anything, an increased minimum wage, D.C. statehood, court packing, the Green New Deal, single-payer health care, by simple majority. There have been 5 COVID relief bills passed in the past year, all using regular order. So why would Democrats use reconciliation now, especially when 10 Republicans have offered them a path to a filibuster-proof bipartisan majority? Because they don't want to make any significant policy concessions to the minority to get those 10 Republican votes. And in service of that, they are willing to destroy an institutional guardrail that has kept our country centrist and stable. Manchin can save the guardrail his mentor created by warning Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, D. New York, that he will kill the whole relief package if Democrats ditch the Byrd Rule, and then doing so if they don't listen. Manchin has said he will vote only in a bipartisan way. Now he has to follow through. It's not just the legacy of Robert C. Byrd, but the fate of the U.S. Senate as the world's greatest deliberative body that rests in Manchin's hands. Mark A. Thiessen, Washington Post Writers Group.
Rig count approaches 200 in the Permian Basin by Mella McEwen. MMCEWEN at MRT.com. Strengthening commodity prices are fueling a continued rise in the nation's rig count as it rebounds from last year's pandemic-related oil market crash. In their weekly rig count, oil field services firm Baker Hughes and data analytics firm Enverus reported an 8-rig rise in the U.S. rig count for 392 rigs at work nationwide. There were 299 rigs drilling for oil, up 4, but 377 below the 676 were seeking crude last February. The number of rigs drilling for natural gas rose by 4, but is 19 below the 111 tallied last year. Texas added 7 rigs for 189. New Mexico lost 1 rig for 61 at work for the week. Ohio was the only other state besides Texas to gain, adding 2 rigs to even, while New Mexico was the only producing state to post a decline. The Permian Basin added 6 rigs for 198. Lee County, New Mexico, was the most active county in the Permian with 32 rigs. Eddy County followed with 29 rigs. Martin County jumped 3. Loving County had 18. Howard County added 1 for 17 rigs. Midland County and Reeves County each reported 16 rigs this week, down 2. Orion County saw its first drilling activity of the year with one. Enverus Rig Analytics reported the U.S. rig count is up 12% in the last month, but still down 47% year over year. In the Permian, Chevron has accelerated to a six-rig program after averaging five in January. NGP Partners backed Tap Rock Operating ramped up to five rigs at the beginning of February after averaging four rigs for the last 3 weeks. Tap Rock has never had this many rigs running, all of which are on federal land in Lee County. Apache dusted off a Permian drilling program that had been dormant for 8 months by mobilizing a rig in Upton County. And after a nine-month drilling freeze, Battalion Oil is running a rig in Ward County. In the Williston, Continental Resources has increased to three after averaging two since May. Whiting Petroleum is now running one rig after a nine-month drilling vacation.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.